And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Harry Dent. This hour, we'll take your phone calls as we talk about his predictions. And what would you say your prediction rate is, Harry, over the years?
On big turning points, we were the only ones that called the collapse of Japan in 1989, the recession of the early 90s, and then the greatest boom in history from there into 2007. We called the tech peak in early 2000. We also called, I'd say my most famous one, which I'm not as famous for, is calling the Japan crash in the late 80s, starting there. And then the real estate bubble in late 2005. I was just moving from Miami to Tampa to caretake my wife's family. And I told our newsletter subscribers, sell, this bubble's getting ready to peak. And then by early 2006, prices peaked and went straight down for 6 years. So we called the real estate crash as well. My biggest error, George, has been simply with this period from 2009 forward where governments just dumped $16 trillion in the economy. That's never happened before. I didn't think the bubble would last this long until Trump got elected by surprise. And I said, oh, okay, we're just in the orgasmic, what I call it, final phase of this bubble, and it's going to last a few more years. But that was my worst forecast, is thinking, you know, back in 2015 or 16 that this thing could be over.
Yeah, interesting. Now, Facebook is having trouble with its currency that it's trying to get out there. Now, what about Bitcoin? What's going on in that arena?
Well, I tell you, I've spoken at three major Bitcoin conferences over the last year and a half. And, of course, I come from the outside and say, look, I don't understand the industry, but I do understand you are a decentralizing technology, a network technology like the Internet, and you're going to bring the same type of Internet-like innovation into financial assets in the money arena, which is really important because that's where the Internet's failing. I hate to buy anything anymore. There's so many passwords and security stuff and all. It's like the Internet's about to break down. So this is the next big thing, and the proof of it is exactly this crazy bubble. This Bitcoin bubble that peaked in late 2017 is crazy. You got a lot of companies that have nothing behind them at this point. Even Bitcoin is only like $300 billion worth of market value. It can't be the new gold, the new standard yet, but it could be longer term. The most important, blockchain basically can totally redesign our financial systems, and that's going to be a big, big thing. The sign of it is, just like the Internet, in the last stage of the tech bubble from 1995 to 2000, Internet stocks only emerged, including Amazon, in the last year, late 1998 into early 2000, and they were a meteoric bubble, just like this. So that was the final bubble of the bubble. I see the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin as the final bubble of this second tech bubble, and they're going to crash with it. When they do, that's going to be the buy opportunity of a lifetime. People don't realize Amazon went to 160 in early 2000 and crashed to $6 in late 2001 in that tech wreck, and of course went to over $2,000 in the 15 years after that. So I see a big cryptocurrency, and really more so blockchain revolution. It's going to be that's going to be one of the key places to buy, along with Asia, India, and Southeast Asia in this crash. But right now, Bitcoin just failed. Yeah, I thought it might make one more run to 30, 32,000, but it just fell out of a pattern dangerously, and I think Bitcoin is over for now. Look for it to go somewhere in the $1,000 to $3,000 area, and that's probably going to be a couple years from now in this crash, then it will be the buy of a lifetime.
Is there anything wrong with just hoarding cash?
No, you know, people don't get that. People say, well, if I get in cash, you know, I'm not earning anything. Cash holds your value, especially in the U.S. dollar, which has been the best house in a bad neighborhood. We're not a good house. We're just the best. And in 2008, the U.S. dollar went up and gold went down. I have to argue with the gold bugs all the time. That's the flight to safety. And so when everything crashes, like stocks, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90%, real estate 30, 40, 50, gold down 40, 50, 60, your cash now buys more of everything. Now, better than that, or you get in high-quality bonds like the 30-year Treasury. A 30-year Treasury bond, you can get a 2.2% interest on that right now, which is better than the average stock dividend. And yet, because you're locking in rates when they're higher, when they fall in a downturn like this, like the 30s or like in 2008, that 30-year Treasury bond or a AAA, a very high-quality corporate bond, will appreciate from the deflation and falling interest rates when everything else goes down. So you get appreciation, you get some interest. So high-quality bonds are better than cash, but there is nothing wrong with sitting in cash, because the only way to get out of this bubble is to get out of the way, preserve it, and then wait like Joseph Kennedy did in the early 30s and buy stuff on what I call the sale of a lifetime. That was one of my previous books, like when this happens.
If you have cash and you're ready,
everything's going to be on sale.
And if you're ready to buy, you could make a fortune.
And you have to be liquid to buy, and you have to not have lost everything. If you lose all your financial assets, you know, your stock account and your real estate, and you can't even borrow or you can't even get a loan anymore, how do you take advantage of it? You have to see it coming. And I'm telling you, George, because I've done this for a long time, only 1% of people are going to see this coming. And I'm just trying to talk. I'm trying to make everyday people think like the smart money here. And, you know, by the way, we got a free newsletter for people to get to know us, harrydent.com. That's all I can tell people. You know, what I'm saying is kind of different from the mainstream. But if you get to know us, you'll see we've been predicting this stuff. We know what we're doing, and most economists really don't have a clue about what's about to hit.
To the phones we now go. Wildcard, Randall's with us in Indianapolis. Hey, Randall, go ahead, sir.
Hey, still love the show. Kept on calling, finally got in.
Thank you, sir.
Great guest you have tonight. The question I got, a couple questions actually, quick ones, is for the people who took the money out in like August or late July, and they don't know what to do with it now, what should they do with it? Should they put it back in the stock market or buy gold and silver or, I don't know, move to Mexico or Costa Rica or something? And if you was going to put a $100 bill on it right now and you had to say a date that the stock market is truly going to free fall, when do you think that's going to be?
Okay, first of all, I think stocks have largely peaked here. I think we are going to see a deeper correction than we saw late last year when people, if you got out last late August, September, you did good. You either got out near the top or about as close as you're ever going to hope to get. I think we're going to see a bigger downturn. They got to squeeze out all the people that are bullish, and then you're going to see one more run with one last, you know, Hail Mary stimulus program by the Fed and central banks. And I think only the NASDAQ is going to make a new high next year. My best prediction for when the stock market really goes in this longer-term downturn, and especially, like you say, a free fall, would be somewhere between March and June of next year. But again, I think the Dow and S&P may have already peaked, and it will only be the NASDAQ, the leading stocks. That's what happens in a bubble like this or a long-term peak, that the investors keep going towards the biggest and best stocks, and that's called a divergence, and that's a sign that you're peaking. So if we see new highs next year in the NASDAQ but don't on the S&P and Dow, that's your sell signal. But I tell you, right now people should be out. I would have that money split between cash, you know, just short-term CDs and T-bills, and 10-year and 30-year Treasury bonds. That's the best place to sit and just let this thing happen. There's no way to pick it perfectly, but that's the place to be in the 1930s. Those U.S. Treasury bonds long-term and the AAA corporates doubled in value over that decade when stocks and real estate and commodities and everything else crashed 50 to 90%. So your goal here is to protect your money and earn a little and be liquid to take advantage. I'd say, and I'm also predicting today, if I had to put a date on when the stock market would bottom, probably late 2022 and the economy sometime in mid to late 2023. Stocks bottom ahead of things. So you got to get out around now. And just like Joseph Kennedy in late 29, you get back in when? Late 32. That's an exact 90-year lag, by the way, and that's my most powerful long-term cycle. I am saying the stock market is sitting very similar to where it was in 1929 right now, and you got a 29 to 32 like crash in the next 2 to 3 years. So get out of the way, and then you reinvest, and then you focus on things like, you know, cryptocurrencies and blockchain and new technologies and nursing homes that are going to grow faster than any baby boom segment. But most of all, the world is going to India and Southeast Asia, China is done for a while. Not altogether, but they are largely done. They overdid it. It's going to take them 5 to 10 years to crawl out of this because they are going to get hit the hardest. So there's clear places to invest, but the key thing, preserve your money now. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
Let's go to Alex, east of the Rockies in Texas. Alex, go ahead.
How you doing?
Great, Alex. Hope you are too.
There was a guy. I'm an economist, an amateur, but I'm still an economist. When I was in high school, I was one of 12 people who took economics.
In the country.
Just about. There was a guy by the name of James Mackey. He wrote a book in 1937 called The Five Causes of the Great Depression. Everything that he put in there, all the five causes, is a perfect match to exactly what's going on today.
Oh, boy.
Only worse. And not only that, there's one more added problem. Worthless currency, basically a computer digit. And now we're going to where it's not even that. It's just transferred by a cell phone. And I wonder, also, I wonder what you think about buying silver. I'll buy silver.
We like silver. We've got a silver candidate, Lear Financial. They love silver right now. Harry, but he's right about one thing. The feds, how long can they keep dumping money into the system like this?
Well, they're doubling down. Once you start doing this, I think that the Federal Reserve, when the crash first happened, the first thing saved the banks, so they put in $1 trillion. I think that was a good move. That's the only good move they made. But they're also thinking, oh, if we lower interest rates and put reserves in the system, well, businesses and consumers will want to borrow, and that'll get the economy going. No, everybody overexpanded. Consumers overborrowed and bought houses, and businesses overborrowed and capacity. So we didn't do that. So they started to realize, well, but if we keep pumping money in the economy, it does do one thing. It drives up stock prices and financial assets like bonds and real estate and stuff. So at least that top 20%, and especially the 1% who are already wealthier than ever, get wealthier, and these people are still spending money. So, but you only do it so long. The wealthiest 20% in our country peak later than the average person at 46. They peak at 57. Well, that was late 2018. So note that we got a big short-term hit from the tax cuts, and in 2019, we're already going back to 2%, and the forecast could go lower, and ours are too. So it's you can't keep this going, because who do you stimulate once the people with financial assets have already spent everything they could and refinanced their home and bought a yacht or whatever they're going to do? And financial assets, I am saying right here on the phone that we've already seen the best of the stock market, if not the top for the broader stock market. So where are you going to get these financial assets? We have a second real estate bubble that is a little higher than the first one, but compared to the fundamental demand that I can project with my demographic models, we are 40% overvalued now instead of 20% in 2006 at the last peak. So we're going to see a bigger downturn. So these you can't pump up the financial assets hardly anymore. And the demographic trends, which we forecast would weaken in 2008, are getting worse. So they're running out of steam. They're running out of ammunition. That's why I say in the next year, we are going to see a major crash start, and I think it happens sooner than later. I still think it's going to happen probably in the second quarter of next year.
Well, that's a disaster for the current president.
Oh, it is a disaster. There's no way you can win with a crashing economy. Herbert Hoover was elected in late 28, a businessman coming from the outside, supposed to, you know, do all these great things, not be political, and the Great Depression hit, and guess what? He had the worst landslide loss in history. There's no way you can do well. And you have to realize, when Obama came in, you know, for good or bad, the recession had already started. You couldn't blame 2000.
It wasn't his fault.
Wasn't his fault, but Trump has been with this, and he has not only been stimulating through the bubble and all this stuff, but he's been hearkening on the Fed to print more, stimulate more. So when this thing goes down and looks like, oh my God, they blew up a bubble and it burst, he's going to be part of the crew. He is going to be blamed for this. There's no way he can be in office this long. So yes, I think a stock crash would decide the election for the Democrats, hands down.
If George Bush were running for his second term in 2008, he never would have gotten reelected.
Oh. Not a chance. You're exactly, George. Not a chance. George W. Bush, H.W. Bush Sr., just had a more minor recession.
That got him. That's right.
In the second half, and he was even turning around, and it still got him.
So true. Next up, we go to Carlos in Carson, California. Hey, Carlos, go ahead.
Good evening. I heard from a very prominent radio broadcaster that the feds were secretly dumping $70 billion a day to bail out certain banks, certain big banks. Have you heard anything about
that? Well, they just dumped in $87 billion for the banks, so I don't know if it's every day, but they have been doing it. Harry?
Yeah, yes, they have. They have ever since they started tightening, which Trump's been criticizing them for, and selling off the bonds they bought and reducing their reserves. That's taking money out of the financial system. So banks are having liquidity problems because of that. And so the Fed has had to step in when the bigger banks won't lend to the smaller banks. And that's what's been happening lately. And the Federal Reserve has also decided, in addition to that repo thing that injects short-term for overnight lending, that's just a liquidity thing. They've also decided to start buying $60 billion like they used to do in bonds a month, their own treasury side. Now think about this for a minute. Governments are issuing record debt, buying their own debt with money printed out of thin air to push down the rates, not only to make the debt accommodatable for the markets, but to push down the rates so they don't have to pay such high interest. I kind of call that cheating. Corporations are using the cheap money from the Fed to buy their own stocks. Earnings per share for companies has grown 120% faster than their earnings because they're just buying back their stocks with cheap money. Everybody's creating an artificial bubble here. Main Street's growing at 2%, the slowest in all of U.S. history, and stocks are having the greatest bubble in history. What does that tell you? Stocks have to crash down to reality and real estate with them. It's that simple.
What happens if there's another war? Not a third war, but a big war.
Well, you know, wars are the best way to stimulate yourself out of a downturn. I mean, people say World War II brought us out of the Great Depression. Well, it wasn't just that. My indicators show that the Bob Hope generation was on a rising generational spending spree from 1942 to 1968 regardless. But yes, wars are a great way. Now, my problem is, who do we fight a war with? I mean, we don't have anybody to fight on the level of World War III, and China certainly is the last person that could afford a war. China is way more exposed to this global economy. They export 35% of their economy. It was 50% at their peak stimulus and stuff. We only export 12, so they cannot afford a war to kill the economy, and they can't really afford this trade war. They just have a longer time horizon and are not willing to give in. So I do not – oh, the other thing, George, I have three cycles, geopolitical, demographic, and technology. The technology cycle is the one that's peaking and in line with 1972 peak and 1929, the big one. But the geopolitical cycle that started with 9/11, that cycle is actually bottoming in late 2019, early 2020. That's the only one that's going to start slowly turning around. So I think we've seen the worst of geopolitical trends in Middle East and Iran and all. I think this is, and then all these mass shootings and stuff, I think this is probably about to slowly turn around, just like the Cold War did in the early 80s when Gorbachev started talking to Reagan. So that's the only cycle that starts to turn around. All of my other cycles just keep going down lower. So it's we've yet to see the worst of this.
That's just what we need, Harry. We're coming back for final questions and calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment, George Norrie here, along with Harry Dent. His website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Like 2008, when the mortgage derivatives created the biggest part of the issue, there seemed to have been a sign for at least the financial folks. They knew it was coming way before we did, the average folks. Are we going to have a sign here, Harry, if the next one happens?
Well, you know, I've got one that I've developed since then, George. It's called a Smart Money Index that I found that most people aren't looking at. The Smart Money buys, at the end of the day, after watching what everybody else does, and of course, by the time it opens the next morning, it's already the opening's already been set before everyday people could trade. So the smart money, when they by measuring when they're buying and what they're doing, the smart money index says the smart money since January of 2018, when this topping process, I've been telling people we've been seeing slight new highs and then more violent new lows until we end up in this big crash. The smart money is more bearish on this bubble, on this stock market, than they were at the top of the tech bubble in 2000. So they're saying a bigger crash is coming, and they're saying it's coming sooner than later. So that is the best indicator. And of course, any surprises politically on the impeachment process or any breakdown, I think most of the debt since 2008 has come in emerging countries, especially China, and in corporate debt, not as much as consumer stuff. So I think you're going to see breakdowns in bonds around the world and emerging country debt. And of course, gosh, one developer or something bad goes down in China, man, that alone. So, yeah. But right now, the stock patterns are the best. Higher highs, lower lows. I think we've just hit our higher highs for most markets, and the next downturn is maybe 30% or more, and then there's a final rally that may not go higher, and then you get the big one, you know, down. So this is no time to fool around, not a correction, this is a crash of a lifetime followed by the sale of a lifetime. And like Joseph Kennedy, you have to get out near the top to have the money to take advantage of the bottom. And you will make more money by catching this swing than any time in your life, while, unfortunately, most people end up saying, oh, my God, what happened to my house? Oh, my God, what happened to my stock portfolio that I was going to retire on?
Yeah, you know, it's gone.
People are going to be in shock. I hate to say it, but.
Let's go to Joel in Florida, Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Joel, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George, it's good to speak to you again. How are you today?
Good, Joel. Thank you.
Good. Harry, I've been following your research for a while, and you actually inspired me to launch a multi-asset investment fund that includes crypto assets as part of its investment program. We accepted our first investment of April of this year, and the fund's up about 70% year to date. George, do you think I could give out my website and ask Harry a question about Bitcoin?
Ask the question first. Let's see how he answers you.
Okay, excellent. So, Harry, I have to respectfully disagree with your assessment of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is most similar to gold, a store of value. It's not in competition with any fiat currency, in my opinion. And while it may be volatile, it is the future. There are only 21 million Bitcoin that will ever exist, and this, by definition, makes it a deflationary asset. And Bitcoin's volatility is directly connected to its predetermined halving events, H-A-L-V-I-N-G, events that occur every 4 years or 210,000 blocks. And this means that every 4 years, the block reward that the miners receive for validating transactions on the Bitcoin network gets cut in half. This happened twice so far, and this feature is programmed into Bitcoin. It will continue until the last Bitcoin is mined sometime in the year 2140. And large volatility events have occurred.
Yeah, you're making a statement instead of a question. Did you understand that I'm very bullish? Did you hear what I said earlier? This is the next internet wave, the next big thing to happen. But if you look back, I compare Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies to the internet on about a 20-year lag. And they had a hype phase, just like now, that crashed. And then the real boom happened from 2001 to 2002 into recently. So I am very bullish. I'm not disagreeing with anything you say. I'm just saying we're still in that hype phase, and what you need to be doing. And we just had our own conference, and a speaker there was saying, hey, Bitcoin may be extremely volatile, but if you look at it, the lows never go lower. So there is a progression here, but it is very volatile. And so people need to be buying when it crashes. And I'm telling you, I think despite the halving, it still goes down with this bubble. And then it's going to be the probably single best stock area to buy in for the next boom in the United States.
To buy in.
I'm not disagreeing with you. This got huge, but this is Internet 2.0, and it's all about financial assets and money rather than emails and Google.
I'm going to let Joel give out his website. Go ahead, Joel.
I appreciate that, George. Before I give it out, I'd like to mention that we only accept investments from accredited investors. So if you are accredited, and you're interested in a vehicle that includes crypto assets as part of its investment program, you can go to our contact page, get our phone number, and give us a call during business hours. The website is www.coindragon.com, and that is spelt with a K, so that's K-O-I-N-D-R-A-G-O-N.com.
Very good. One of our listeners, but he sounds like he knows what he's talking about, Harry.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, I'm a big fan of this. You just have early stage industries are always the most volatile, and the internet was no exception. Again, Amazon went to 160 from nothing, and then down to 6, and then to 2,000. That's what you're dealing with. You want to catch that 6 to 2,000 is what you want.
What about people who want to invest in Chinese markets and things like that? Get out and get out now, huh?
Okay, first of all, China is not the place. China has mortgaged their future. They have 22 to 27% empty condos throughout their economy, excess capacity in every industry. They have built stuff to kind of force rural people to move into cities, and now those rural people are going back. We're measuring that. Their workforce forever has already peaked because of their one-child policy decades ago. They're the only emerging country whose demographics are negative over the coming decades. India is the opposite, but China still has urbanization to go. But it's going to take longer. When this thing crashes, you want to switch from China to India and Southeast Asia. Mark my words on that. India is the next China. I just did a whole newsletter on that. If you look at India, the only difference between India and China and some other more successful emerging countries, India is still largely rural. As India accelerates urbanization, their productivity from urbanization is better than China. They are underinvested in everything. China's overinvested. India and Southeast Asia are the next big thing to happen globally, and cryptocurrencies and the aging healthcare, pharmaceutical, you know, nursing homes, cruise ship industries are the big thing. And again, cryptocurrencies are going to be one of the big tech sectors. Just I'd rather it shake out a little more first.
Jeff in Sonora, California is with us. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Hey, I know you've got to go real quickly, but I just don't really believe that Elizabeth Warren has a chance. I mean, let's face it. She lied about her Native American heritage. The Americans aren't going to go for that. And honestly, Mr. Dent sounds like he has an anti-Trump agenda, like up there with the CNN head Jeff Zucker.
He said big, fat, ugly bubble. Now he's pumping it up. He is doing what's in his interest and not the country's. What he campaigned on and what he's doing to me are two different things. So I wanted him over Hillary, but I would not vote to reelect him. He's basically doing what's in his interest. To be sit there and tell the Federal Reserve and central banks to print more and more after they printed more money, the greatest Ponzi scheme in finance and history, is not good policy. I'm sorry, I can't agree with Donald on that one. I like confronting China. I like a lot of things he's doing. I do not like that, and I think that's going to kill him. So,
and Harry, explain.
By the way, whether you like Elizabeth Warren or not, she is the only candidate of all of them consistently rising, and everybody else, including Biden and Trump, are falling. So you just got to look at reality. I don't care if you like her or not. That's what the things say, and that might change. I just look at the reality. I don't have a political persuasion.
And as we've talked about, Harry, a lot will do with the economy right before the election.
Are you kidding? Nothing's more important. A volatile economy will kill any candidate, anyone.
This will go right up to that Tuesday voting day in November. If the economy is rolling along on that day, you know, it might be okay for the president. If it's not, then he's got a problem.
You know, real quick, George, I have two scenarios. One of them, my favorite, is that it does peak in the first half of next year and starts this dramatic drive, and that does shift the election. The other one is that Trump does pull off a strong enough stimulus program to keep it going, and then we get a peak just before or after the election. That's my two scenarios. I favor the earlier peak.
Interesting. Gino's with us in St. Louis. Hey, Gino, go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Dent is making sense to me, and being a Coast to Coast insider, I can just ask the questions and listen tomorrow to the answers.
Okay, you got it.
First of all, I want to know if Mr. Dent is a fiduciary, and secondly, I want to know about annuities, if he thinks that's something that I can do. I got a lot of money in the stock market. I'm about to retire. And in the last couple of years, I've just been treading water. I haven't been making any money. I'm not losing money, but I'm not making any money either.
Yeah, I am not a fiduciary. I do not manage money. My company has a lot of investment services. I do what I do. I forecast. The more I'm independent of political persuasions and not in the market myself, the more objective. Objectivity is everything in my profession. Now, annuities. Annuities, if you do them properly.
And explain what they are to people who might not know, Harry.
Okay, well, annuities are basically insurance-based products, and you can get a fixed annuity that says, okay, you're going to give me a certain amount of money, we're going to invest it conservatively in bonds and stuff, and pay you over your expected lifetime a payment for the rest of your life. Now, if you die earlier, it's a worse deal if you die later. So if you think you're going to live longer than average, it's a good deal. And right now, even though interest rates are low, which doesn't favor fixed annuities, I say they're going to go lower the next 2 years, so I think that could be an advantage. They have variable annuities where you can buy stocks and funds inside. If you get in a variable annuity, you need to be on the conservative side in this danger period into 2022 or 23. Then you can get back into stock and risky investments. So, but you have to do it. I mean, insurance-based products cost more up front, so you have to structure it to save taxes. And I can tell you, regardless who gets elected, we have this big crash. Taxes are going to go up like they did in the 1930s. I am in Puerto Rico. Partly because I'm paying much lower taxes and are not going to have the same politics here. So this, if you use them properly, the upfront fees are worth it because you can shelter your income from taxes. And taxes are going to go up, I think, dramatically. Now, what are you hearing from the Democrats? Raising taxes, especially on the more affluent people and extremely on billionaires. So not only get realistic about the economy, get realistic. Taxes are going up, especially on income.
Why don't we ever go to that fair tax that we've talked about on this program before, Harry, just the general sales tax, and give vouchers to the people who can't afford it?
It would be too logical. It would be too simple. It would be better because you're taxing spending more than you are savings, and we've been in a dearth of savings for a long time. You wouldn't need as much tax complication. I mean, people spend more money on their tax preparation than they do on their taxes some of the time. So, I think we're going to see. I've got a chapter in the coming book and in my past book called The 22 Reforms, and there's going to be a lot of reforms. Taxes, banking systems. We have to end lobbying. That's the worst single thing that is corrupted capitalism and democracy. There are going to be a lot of reforms. We'll have to see how it shakes out. I certainly hope that whoever gets elected calls a few objective people like me, because like you're saying, George, the most obvious solutions, the simplest solutions are the best, but because of politics and having to please everybody, we always end up with the most complicated, perverted solutions. Our tax system and our health care system is so screwed up, we need to totally redesign. I would love that flat tax.
See if we can get Phil in Irvine, California in for a bit. Phil, go ahead.
Hey, my call's a lot different than the last one, guys. Hey, thanks, George. Hey, Harry, I had my crash 5 years ago. I had a catastrophic business failure, and I acquired a chronic progressive disease at the same time. I'm stable and I'm working, but I lost everything and had to start over again at 60, and I'm disabled. So I can't move very well, but I'm great on the phone. You got any ideas? Because I figure I got one more hurrah left in me.
You got it. In a minute left, Harry. Go ahead.
Yes. Again, if you get out of risky assets, real estate, stocks, even commodities right now, and let them just fall, you're going to be able to reinvest and make the greatest fortune of your lifetime. And for entrepreneurial people, starting new business, wait until things crash. It opens up a lot of opportunities. Entrepreneurs are the biggest beneficiaries of a big reset and crash like this. So a lot of opportunities if you see it coming. You're lucky. You've seen adversity ahead of the time, so you know what it is, and you're now have learned enough to react a lot better than most people. Most people, this is going to be deer in the headlights. I'm just telling you that. So I'm trying to warn people, and most people still won't get it. So you're the type of person that will get it because you've already gotten whacked. It's actually, you may look back and say, wow, that's the best thing ever happened to me.
Well, and he said he's good on the phone, so there's a job potential there. I'd rather talk to him than some caller in India, huh? Hey, Harry, thanks for being on the program. Again, we've got your website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Harry Dent, his most recent book is called Zero Hour. In a moment, A former U.S. Marine joins us. I'll tell you why in just a second.